man himself, Eddie Harris, and a truckload of great friends having fun with his composition, Sham Time. This is from his 1968 album, The Electrifying Eddie Harris. An innovative composer and musician, Harris literally changed the sound of music when he invented the electrified saxophone. He died of congestive heart failure in Los Angeles in 1996. He was 62 years old. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. I hope you had a good weekend. And now we get back to the business of the day. And the business of the day is your president. I'm giving him to you. I don't want him. Donald Trump. Well, of course, over the weekend, we learned more chaos and calamity afflicting the Trump administration. And it has to do with the president deciding or wanting to send back all of those people who were sequestered at the border with and without their children to the points of origin without the benefit of a hearing or a trial as is required by law. And, you know, I'll get to that in a minute because we have to discuss Trump's tactics. We also learned on the weekend that Jim Mattis, the person appointed in this administration and who has had a long and extensive history of military experience, apparently Trump is souring on him too, so he may go. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on. But we do know that Trump is winning. Yes, he is. And it's a very bad thing. Showing little or no regard for institutional practice, and certainly the practice of the office of the President of the United States, Trump has made quick work of tearing at and tearing up and tearing down once revered pillars of democracy and has succeeded significantly in ushering the era of the imperial presidency. And you could read that. I mean, you could substitute the word autocrat, despot. Any number of similar terms would be quite accurate here. He is the smartest, shrewdest, greatest president America's ever had, Trump proclaims. And this is in his own estimation. All he needs is for the people to get out of the way. And if they get out of the way, you would have literally the perfect country. Stunningly, the nation's guardians actually did get out of the way and are getting out of the way. And even though Trump's self-congratulatory boasts of accomplishments very often differ widely from the facts, in just a year and a half, the president has radically altered the fundamental idea of what it means to be American, to Americans themselves and to the world. So we're going to talk today about Trump's triumph, which is a byproduct, I would contend, of a major crisis of political leadership and of a system resistant to change. We all know how this started. Here's a guy who came around at a time when, in fact, he saw an opportunity created by the lackluster leadership that existed at that time. that had turned so many people off, and in turning them off, created a brand new and available pool of voters disaffected with what America had come to mean to them. It didn't create them, but it created the atmosphere in which they were able to give full voice to these feelings of alienation within the United States. Of course, we know that a lot of that alienation had to do with white supremacy. They were that part of America that felt disaffected, thrown away, and in fact kind of lost, because their America was a race-based America. Their America said that they were superior people. But the actual facts of day-to-day life contradicted that. They were not making the kind of money they used to make or that they expected to make. All of their, or most all of their values, as they say, were kind of blown away. A whole different culture had overtaken America that left them out, not only left them out, but made them targets in their view. They were made fun of. And politically, even within the right wing of politics, they were not welcomed. They were viewed as people with not quite enough education. They weren't exactly middle class, which is the ideal. You know, they were rough and ready people. And for years, in many Democratic administrations even, as well as Republican, they were in the bleachers, in the high seats, and looking down at the playing field without having any opportunity to really appreciate the game. They were disaffected people. Along comes a guy who speaks their language, even if it's in code, even if it is a bit of dog whistling, but he is tending to their psychological needs. He's making them feel that they belong. Not only do they belong, but they are the essence of America. They are the hard-working, twin-fisted people who put their noses to the grindstone, held on to the values that made America great. And he is sending messages to them about understanding who caused this to happen, and sending messages to them that with his election, he will put things right. He will restore them to their rightful place and their culture to their rightful place in America. It really was no surprise that Donald Trump trounced Hillary Clinton, because by the time she showed up as a candidate, a presidential candidate, the Democrats had wasted much of their currency, their political currency. They were corrupt. They were actually disdainful of their own constituencies. They were lazy, and they believed that they need not worry. They became comfortable about government, and so they didn't try hard to do much. Government gave them a place to hide and receive, you know, pretty substantial payment for hiding. And they practiced the politics. Everybody could have seen it. The politics, although they talked about bringing people together, they actually were driving people apart. Ironically, this was the accusation they leveled at Trump, from Trump being a divider. The Democrats didn't do very much to bring people together. We just think so, and we just prefer to think that. But we still had the phenomenon of the Southern Democrats. We had the phenomenon of the Northern Democrats. We had the phenomenon of the Democrats only playing symbolic service to the base constituency, that is African Americans and Latinos, people of color, who were the strength of the party. They nominally acknowledged them, but didn't deliver. And what they delivered was not good. I keep talking about the fact that the largest prison industrial complex ever created in the history of the United States and the world was created by the Democrat Bill Clinton. We had an assault, a massive assault on education. We had massive cutbacks on social programs. We certainly had a stagnant unemployment rate that was absolutely stratospheric when it came to blacks. So the Democratic Party was racist in its own right. It can't excuse itself for being so lazy and for not attending to these issues. We had a prolonged period of low birth rate babies. We had the escalation of poverty, all under Democrats, all under Democrats. So by the time Trump came along and started mouthing these observations, he really energized the disaffected. He gave them reason to hope that things would change. Of course, we know that Trump might have genuinely felt these things, but he's a political animal. And his whole thing is, if I'm going to be in this fight, I've got to win every time. I've got to win. So he's a very interesting combination of a soulless person and a politician whose interest is longevity in office. But look at what he accomplished. In less than 2 years, he has gutted everything, turned everything upside down, and made absolute calamity of life in the United States and even beyond it. My assertion is that apart from everything else, Trump is a mentally unstable person. Everybody knows it around him. They all know it. But they put up with it because he is useful in creating a kind of chaos that they want to create, but didn't have the guts to create. Because in the end, the chaos has to do with reordering in a very permanent and visible way the way that people of that ilk believe America initially was organized to function. It has, again, to do with white supremacy. But this is a different thing as well. This is about not just race, but it's also class. And here again, Trump scores a point. He's not of the type of, he's not the type of Republican who conveys middle class and upper middle class values. He doesn't have those anyway. You know, the idea that you're modest and you don't do outlandish things and that kind of stuff. You're conservative. Trump has no use for that. In his plan, he has to move as quickly as possible and as audaciously as possible to energize support, to revive the constituency that he wants to bring back to the American reality where white is more important than everything else. He's doing a great job. He's creating awful havoc and a mess because he doesn't know quite what he's doing, but it doesn't matter to him. This is a kind of public relations campaign. This is the kind of thing that he has to do. It's about gaining mass support. He doesn't care how he gets it. But the ideal is taking root. It is blossoming. It has created again the notion of race as, you know, the bar. That's what is important. This whole situation that recently developed about separating families and so forth. People are up in arms. Oh, he's breaking up families and he's doing this and he's doing that. Okay. But you're missing the point. You're missing the point entirely. He is doing these outrageous things and succeeding at restoring the racial formula. He's restoring the faith in racist America. He's doing a great job. Every chance that he gets, he maligns people of color. In this situation, he calls them animals and assigns to the group an identity just like in Nazi Germany. The Jews were the people to be hated, and Hitler used them to symbolize the struggle in Germany. This is how he reframed everything. In the end, Germany, the struggle in Germany was to expunge those people who threatened the racial purity of Germany. In the United States, African Americans are situated there. Native Americans are situated there. People of color are situated there. And Trump has made it very clear that he is really about restoring America's racial purity. And in that, he is restoring America's supremacy. The problem with America, from Trump's point of view, is that its purity was denatured by the inclusion of others, and including them on, at least theoretically, on equal terms. That's why democracy is so bad. You can't have a person believing in democracy, because democracy means you have to see to the entire group. That's not what he's about. He's an autocrat. He's a despot. He is a supremacist. He's a racist. He cannot, therefore, by definition, believe in these concepts. So people are very upset every time he comes up with a new trick, a new policy, some new saying or whatever it is that goes so grossly against the grain. When if you study it, you see how naturally it fits into his worldview. It's a natural fit. And he's proceeding, it looks scattered, and it is. It looks remarkably chaotic, and it is. But there's some order in that thinking. And the longer he uses these incidents or these policies that provoke people so, the better it is. He's succeeding. He has brought to the fore and to his constituency, as he sees it, the untold truth of America. And that is that America's leaders, recent leaders, have betrayed the true American ideal, which is white supremacy. They've done it in so many ways, and it's to be corrected, because in democratizing America, they've also contributed to America going down the drain, losing its supremacy, losing its authority. And that's why you could work as hard as you want in coal country, and you're not getting anywhere. You see? It makes sense. Now, the problem is, on the flip side, where we have a problem of a different sort. The Democrats, being the so-called opposition party, have no idea who they are or who they ought to be in today's America. They love the idea of superiority, but they can't attain it. They resent the idea that their political futures are with the people they really don't want to be dependent on for political success and longevity. That's African Americans, Latinos, Asians, and the like. They too would like a reversion to the old days of the old South. That's one of the examples I could draw is Jeff Sessions, the U.S. Attorney General. The only thing he's missing is a sheet and one of those conical hats. He's a Democrat. I mean, he embodies the Democratic profile. You don't have to ask whether he really resents Black people. I mean, not resenting black people in the sense that he disagrees with their positions or he disagrees with the policies. No, he resents black people being alive. That's the kind of Democrat that used to be, and that's the kind of Democrat that is being encouraged to rise again. The Democratic Party hasn't done much about that, except that it has found ways to short-circuit political progress. With the superdelegates, with gerrymandering of districts, with outright challenges and backing people with a lot of money to assure a win, people you have no business supporting. They're corrupt. They're in bed with all of the interests that you could think of that used to be anathema. They have cozy relationships. They depend on these huge donors to fund their campaigns. They're no longer relevant to the discussions of today, the serious needs and issues that need to be addressed. They're out of it. They're content in Congress and in state legislatures and in the cities' governments. They're content to just occupy positions of influence and get paid. That's it. The Democratic Party has not sponsored or has not been behind a significant political drive in decades. It has not created a new vision for America in decades. It has not really brought about a creative way of governing in decades. The same old people, they just get older and older, but they're there. They're like VD, they just won't go away. So you have that. Trump, by comparison, looks far more attractive. He's rambunctious. He's creating all kinds of chaos, but he's selling it as creative chaos. I am about the people's business. And I'm not afraid to take on the naysayers because they want to retard our growth. They are not real Americans. They don't have the American spirit. I am willing to take the chance. I will make a lot of mistakes, but I'm genuine. I'm the genuine article. And would you believe more and more people are finding that to be a very convincing argument? And the reason it's a convincing argument is that there's a crisis of leadership on the other side. A crisis of leadership is also developing on Trump's side. You cannot run a supposedly democratic country like a despot. It just doesn't work. At some level, it would grate against the grain of people who have an entirely different definition of patriotism, of what it means to be American, of the notion of democracy. It would trouble them greatly because these were the attributes of people that the United States had singled out for assassination, for toppling their regimes. They said these are the characteristics of people who are undemocratic, usurping the rights of the people to participate in the formation of their society and their governments. We have it going on now. It's acceptable because, as I said before, Trump has thrown, in a very delicate way, almost imperceptible, it is about restoring white supremacy. But it is cast as restoring old traditional American values. You got to read these things so carefully, because if you don't, you're likely to mistake what's going on. Although you are part, we are all targeted by Republicans and Democrats and independents alike. We are all targeted to come into their fold. This is why, in the absence of genuine leadership, especially on the part of the Democrats and independent parties, they're stuck. They have no new ideas. They don't have the energy to even entertain a new idea and to see to it that it gets put into action. They talk. They talk. They hold news conferences. They put out press statements as if that has anything to do with real progress and real achievement. And they still are part of a system designed to resist change. They haven't altered that formula at all, which explains Nancy Pelosi. How is it that you could say, any party could say, that its leader has been there since King Hammer was a hatchet, since chickens had teeth, and still face people who say that they're progressive and they have new ideas? They have no new ideas. They're operating on an antiquated system, just like a fiefdom. People are more concerned with the appointments that they get to prestigious committees. They are very much concerned about their status and their pay. So that's what explains Nancy Pelosi being there forever. And they leave it up to her to decide what the priorities are for the party. The same thing goes for the so-called political upstarts, the independents, or the people who say they are independent. They're not. If you are independent, you take your chances and you cast your lot with the people, not just talking, but actually doing that. You do not, you do not associate with the enemy. Except if there's a strategic value to it, on a vote or on some kind of initiative. But you're neither fish nor fowl, which means you don't have the guts and the courage to go your own way. Even though that's exactly what your constituency wants you to do. They went ahead and organized. I'm talking now, in case anybody is confused, I'm talking about Bernie Sanders. As I've talked about it several times. I'm sure I've irritated people, but it's a legitimate point. It's a different version of Dinah Washington's song. Is you is or is you ain't my baby? 1 minute you're over here. The next minute you're over there. The next minute you are supporting Hillary Clinton.
And this is logical to you.
Well, excuse me, it's not logical to me, so goodbye.
Call me when you have had your therapy and your brain has been readjusted and you're thinking right. But until then, you're neither fish nor fowl. Because here's the thing. In politics, you have to know where you stand. Same thing with the Green Party. We don't know what you are. We know what you claim. But it does not line up with the political truth. So I will have to leave you aside for the moment until you decide to behave right. So you see, when you look at these political developments, and we're talking about Trump, we started off talking about Trump, you see what the real story is. Trump is, in all that he has done, Trump is focused on restoring the old political notions of white supremacy, and this is now global. He's very dedicated to that. He hasn't moved one inch off that square block. He's chaotic. If any of the opposition, if any part of the opposition really had any guts, we would have the most vigorous campaign to unseat him, to challenge the legitimacy of his presidency, and at every step to meet him toe to toe. But they can't do that. They can't do that. They don't have the guts. And they haven't organized in all these years to be effective opponents. So where does that leave us? I don't know. I'm just trying to encourage understanding, clarity, my favorite word, clarity about the situation. And if we get some kind of clarity, whether by ourselves or through some other agency, that we arrive at a point of clarity of exactly where we are. It therefore guides our own decisions. We wouldn't put up with this charade and shenanigans. Impeach 45! Impeach 45! And other such nonsense. People wasting your time, wasting your energy, when you should be concentrating on your alternative plan, which is survival. How do you survive this chaotic situation? And it isn't all Trump. There's so much chaos going on here that isn't him. But we are not paying attention to the fact that we have to, at some point, recognize that we are on our own, and we have to plan, which is the number one imperative. It is the number one imperative for them, which is survival. You must survive. And everything is organized to short-circuit that. And here you should make no distinctions whatsoever between Republicans and Democrats and socialists and independents, make no distinctions. What is your plan for survival? That's the number one imperative in life. Don't get hooked into anybody's political game because they're not honest about it. They're not honestly telling you where they are or what compromises they have made or will make for their survival. They're not going to share that with you. You'll know when it happens when it becomes policy, unquote. So, that's my epistle for the day. See to your survival. And beware of all of the games out here played by everybody to short circuit that. Take a break. Come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888 right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I just got a very dismal warning from my system that my battery is running low. So here's the deal. We'll continue. If it should run low beyond any hope, I certainly will switch to calling in and doing the program by phone hooked up with the studio instead. Okay, so just be aware of that. Okay, so 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And I'm interested in your reactions. What are your thoughts about this notion of where we are and what we ought to be doing in the interests of our survival? Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hi, Idris.
Hello.
I just want to start off by saying your show today is top. I mean, is top 10, you know, 1,000% the best. You're on your game today. I love it. Keep it up. Because you're pointing out the facts on both the right and the left. And most people in this country, that's how they think, either they're on the left side or on the right side. And you've pointed out clearly how it's all just has clearly been exposed as this big uniparty, and they both overlap one another. I've called before and I've said that I voted for Trump. You talked about survival. Even though I voted for Trump, I've had zero confidence in the economy. One thing that me and my family are doing to survive in the near term, we've been saving cash. We've been getting out of debt. We don't borrow any money. We've been hoarding cash at the best as we can, whether it's a few dollars a month. You've got to put away your cash. You got to not get into debt, because I don't trust this economy. There's a saying that they say cash is king. When the time comes, you will need cash. When the storm comes for a hurricane, one of the things they tell you to do is to have cash. So that's one thing we're doing for survival. The reason I voted for Trump was it was to disrupt what you were talking about as far as the liberal thoughts are. That was the reason I had voted for Trump, was to disrupt that. It was more like a protest vote. I would have voted for Bernie Sanders had he done what you said we wanted him to do was to be run, go with the public, run third party, and I would have voted for Bernie on, at that point, because I'm more of an independent than anything else at heart. Also, I wanted to say, it's escaping my mind. Oh, there's two big stories on, in the, on, you know, social media. One is Barbecue Becky. The other one is Permit Patty. If people just look at those two things up, Permit Patty and Barbecue Becky, you will see what you were talking about as far as the left is concerned, how those policies hurt the little people. And those that those scenarios is what led people to vote for Trump. Okay, you have in Permit Patty case, you have a lady calling the police on a little girl selling water. Okay, because
you see these stories really in and of themselves, and I'm saying to this to you as a journalist, so I've been around for a while. They're really not very important stories, but they are meant to tug at your heartstrings. They're meant to condition your attitudes, and they may or may not even be real, but they're out there to influence people's opinions. You know, I'm sure when you read the story about the woman trying to get an 8-year-old girl arrested because she's trying to raise some money for cancer treatment, I mean, how could you not be moved by a story like that? But we have also, in the effort to win people's minds, we have all kinds of things being put in the arsenal of propaganda. So be very careful about these things.
I understand that, but I'm not necessarily trying to say that these are real or fake events. My point is that what those two stories, from what I saw, because in on the case of the Barbecue Betty case, you had two guys barbecuing in the park, and she's saying that you can't barbecue with charcoal. Now, that leads me to believe that this woman is concerned with the environment. Now, in these two cases, they could be fake, okay? But when you have a candidate like Hillary Clinton go to a state, I forgot which state she goes, and she says, I'm going to put the coal business out of business, and like, and in that state, the coal industry was a major employer of that state. You know, how are you going to tell people in their face, I'm going to affect your life all for the better of something else, when you don't even have a backup? That is the case of pulling the cart before the horse. Okay, and the same thing with Barack Obama. The first 2 years of his administration, they focus, instead of focusing on getting people jobs and things like that, what did he focus on? What did he waste his political capital on? Obamacare. Okay. What good is it to me that, okay, you're going to get me Obamacare, but now I don't have a job. I can't even feed myself.
That isn't it. I don't fault him for wanting to produce a healthcare, a logical or rational healthcare system. I don't fault him for that. But Obamacare wasn't that to begin
exactly.
with.
Exactly.
It was, literally handed to him by Hillary Clinton, who organized in the interest of the healthcare industry. In fact, she did it in secret. She called people together, locked them up literally in a room, and for a long time they put this thing together that would have been a boondoggle for the healthcare industry. It was not a patient-centered, it still isn't a patient-centered plan. And nobody else was consulted. It did not go before Congress. It was passed in the middle of the night when most people had gone home. And you know, it's the old democratic way of doing business. This is what the fine, upstanding, Barack Obama did. So it was in keeping, in fact, it was very much in keeping with the old democratic way of doing business under the table. using the health, trading the health of millions of Americans, and basically using it to create unprecedented wealth for the healthcare industry. So Obama gets no free pass here. He did it. He did not himself construct the Obamacare. That was Hillary Clinton who assigned herself the job almost like a cabinet member. She was not a member of cabinet at the time. And she decided that she was going to put together the perfect plan to create billions and billions of dollars in profits for the healthcare industry. So another example of how politics under even the hopeful Obama was no different than politics under the Clintons. Thanks for your call, Tony. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Hello.
Yeah, I think, I hope everybody's feeling well and taking care of themselves.
Thank you. What have you to say? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, we're not too much time, so we're kicking a can down the road again. We keep going over the same stuff over and over again. I mean, at this point, we have to understand that this empire has something that all the other empires didn't have. They have technology, they have robots and machines to do the work that we used to do. So we have become obsolete and expendable. Now, Mexicans are told they're not allowed to come across the border anymore. We've been used to Mexicans always coming across the border during farming time because they were cheap labor. And they would come across, and they pick the oranges and the lettuce, and when they make a little money, then they go back to Mexico. Now they don't need them anymore because they got machines to do that work. But they're not telling the truth. We're expendable. At this point, what we need to do is to get real. And if there's, we could pretty much say, safely say, that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are one party, and we could call them the White Party. You got the Green Party and you got the White Party. So what we need now is the Black Party. And let the 96% of the black people vote for the Black Party and get our 12% that we need to get another party into the mix. And that would be a big victory for the people, the people of the United States. We have to get another party in there to be part of the debates so that somebody can expose what's going on, you know, right there. People don't pay attention to politics. But when the debates come on, they watch the debates. It's like the Oscars, you know.
Well, I don't know. These ideas have been raised before, but the question is how feasible are the ideas based on the math, not on the emotion of voting, but based on the math of voting. I think it needs to be explored. I think it's an interesting proposition, but whether it's feasible or not, meaning whether it has a chance to be successful, what are the particular challenges that confront such a plan, that too has to be raised and dealt with and been dealt with. So we don't know that is necessarily, you know, an ironclad plan.
Well, when Obama ran for president, 96% of the black voters voted for him. That's no surprise. That was what everybody expected. That accounted for 12%. He still needed another 30%, 40% of the vote. That means a lot of white people had to vote for him in order for him to get elected.
But it also means when you say 96% of black voters voted for him. You have to break that down. How many black voters did not vote?
Oh.
That's the thing. Well, I'm hearing music, which means we've come to the end of the program. Stay tuned. Coming up next,
what in the cell is going on? We'll see each other tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening.